from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, we are revisiting some important interviews you may have missed. First up, Tim Drake talks with Jules Green. She is a former abortion business worker who not only left the abortion industry, but also came into the Catholic Church. After that, Dan Burke talks with Sister Susan Piper. She is the Mother Superior of the female branch of the Apostles of the Interior Life, and she's going to talk about the importance of spiritual direction. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Tim Drake, senior writer for the Register, and Dan Burke, executive director of the Register. We'll start with Tim. You know, a number of people have left the abortion industry, and some in a very high-profile way, thinking here of people like Abby Johnson, who has even written a book about her experience. Tim, do we have any idea of how many people have walked away from this deadly profession?
Yeah, it's a good question, Tom. You know, the organization 40 Days for Life has been keeping count, and they're aware of at least 69 abortion workers who have left the industry just in the last 5 years. And among them are Jules Green. She's a former abortion business worker, and she not only left the abortion industry, but she's become an outspoken advocate for life, and she also has entered the Catholic Church. Her story generated many readers online at the National Catholic Register's website, and so we decided to have her on Register Radio. Thanks for joining us, Jules.
My pleasure.
So, Jules, first of all, you know, I think the natural question is, you know, can you tell us a little bit about how you first got involved in working in the abortion industry?
Sure. I can tell you it's a strange journey. I was coerced into having an abortion when I was 17 that I did not want, and it devastated me. I tried to take my own life within weeks of my abortion, overwhelmed with guilt, but strangely enough, while I was recovering in an adolescent psychiatric unit for a month, I started to become a pro-abortion activist. I can only assume now, in hindsight, that I was trying to reconcile my guilt and thought, well, if it's legal and all these people think it's okay, maybe I can start to think it's okay too and stop torturing myself with guilt. And within weeks of getting out of the hospital, I marched for abortion rights in Washington. I volunteered as an escort at an abortion clinic and then was hired. This is all within just a few months of trying to take my own life after my own abortion.
And the natural other question that comes to me is, do you think that that some of these experiences are typical of those who work in the abortion industry? And in particular, I'm wondering what the percentage might be of post-abortive women who are working in the abortion industry?
Well, that's a very good point. I think it's pretty high. I know that when I worked at the center, I knew of many co-workers who were post-abortive themselves. Now, I don't know that they particularly went through the the scenario that I just described. I think my case might be a little more peculiar to me, but even in the folks who've come out of the industry, become pro-life, and have started speaking out, I'm not the only one who has also divulged that she's post-abortive. Abby Johnson, Catherine Adair in Boston, who's also a Catholic, post-abortive, former Planned Parenthood worker. So I think that's indicative of the fact that there's probably a high percentage of post-abortive women working in the abortion industry today.
Sure. And when, can you tell us a little bit about when and how the transformation took place, how you became pro-life and started speaking out on this?
I think I've always been intuitively pro-life, which is why I was against the scheduled abortion for myself, for my baby. And I actually ran out of the clinic the first day it was scheduled and ended up going back 2 days later and then missed my baby terribly. And even the whole time I worked at the clinic, I thought what I did was wrong, but it should be okay for you to do it. It never really clicked for me until, I guess, almost 2 years ago, I was contemplating the bizarre, unnatural process of in vitro fertilization and gestational surrogacy, where a woman carries a child she is not genetically related to for another couple. And I learned of one of these gestational surrogates who part of her contract was to have genetic testing on the baby she was carrying for this couple, and the test came back positive for Down syndrome, and she was paid her entire contract fee to abort. And that's when something finally clicked for me that this is wrong. Pregnancy is not a commodity. Babies are not to be part of a transaction, to be bought, sold, killed, and discarded. And that's when I finally woke up.
And you didn't start speaking out immediately after that realization. It took you some time, right?
Well, actually, within a few weeks of being able to self-identify as pro-life, I stumbled upon Abby Johnson's book, and I wrote to her, and she and I corresponded, and I started volunteering in the pro-life movement, but I didn't start speaking until about a year ago. My testimony was published online last July on what would have been my baby's 23rd birthday. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I actually asked them to do that, to do it on my original due date, so that was really important for me.
Sure. I'm Tim Drake. You are listening to Register Radio, and we are speaking with Jules Green, a former abortion worker who not only left the abortion industry but also entered the Catholic Church. And that's what I want to ask you about, Jules, is the Catholic Church, of course, is one of the few that defends life from womb to tomb. And so I'm wondering, was it that or was it something else that led you to consider the Catholic Church?
Most definitely. It was the Catholic Church's unwavering stand on the sanctity of life from natural conception to natural death. That was certainly a big draw, as well as in the Catholic Church, truth is not decided by popular vote. Truth has been truth since the Church was founded by Jesus Christ, and it's the same truth now. And part of that truth I found most appealing was the real presence of our Lord in the Blessed Sacrament. And that has got to be Eucharistic adoration, receiving our Lord in Holy Communion. That has got to be one of the most beautiful and awe-inspiring mysteries of the Catholic Church, and I'm so happy to be a part of it now.
Tell us a little bit about coming into the Church and how that came about.
Well, my husband is a lifelong Catholic. He has an uncle who's a priest, and I was a lifelong Lutheran. And he decided that it was all right he wasn't very strong in his belief at the time. So our children were baptized Lutheran. We went to the Lutheran church. And when I found out I was pro-life, I met with my Lutheran pastor and was very dissatisfied when I left that meeting, understanding that the Lutheran church has essentially a pro-choice, pro-abortion position. And the first book I read when I started to think about the Catholic Church was Rome Sweet Home by the Hahns, mm-hmm. by Scott and Kimberly Hahn. And once I read that book, I called, my husband's uncle, I called Uncle Bug, Father Bob, and spoke to him for about an hour, learning more about the Catholic Church, thinking about it. I started attending Mass. I started reading more conversion stories, more and more books. And then I started RCIA last September, and I was just confirmed this year at Easter Vigil, April 7th.
Wow. Well, welcome to the church. It's
Thank you. We're
glad to have you as a part of it. Can you tell me, for those who might be listening and might be working in the abortion industry, are there resources out there for them that can help them in trying to get out of the abortion industry?
Well, first and foremost, I would say, once you stop believing the lies and the euphemisms that happen inside a clinic, like it's never a fetus or a baby, it's products of conception or the fetus or not even the fetus, it's your pregnancy, the pregnancy. Once those lies are lifted, sometimes it is hard to get out, and Abby Johnson has actually started a ministry called And Then There Were None, meaning there's no clinic workers, there won't be any abortions. And that ministry seeks to help folks who have a change of heart while still working in the clinic. Because sometimes it can be hard to leave. Certainly in this economy, there could be financial reasons that keep, say, a family breadwinner working in an industry that they now find, you know, abhorrent and morally bankrupt. But there are also social reasons that are hard to leave the industry. Sure. All of your friends work at the clinic. When I worked at the clinic, all of my friends were pro-abortion. For years afterwards, all of my friends were pro-abortion. And Abby's ministry is actually helping with that, too. They're hooking up people like myself who've left the industry to just be social support and prayer support for women and men who are attempting to leave the industry. And I think both of those sides of the coin are important, the financial and also the social and spiritual end.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, and maybe you've just answered that, but what the biggest obstacle is that prevents abortion workers from leaving the industry. And I wondered if it was fear or the financial aspect. If you had to point to one particular thing, what would you say it would be?
I would say that it's deception. And here's why. Abby Johnson's story is so unique in that she had literally an aha moment where one day it was okay, and the next day she had to watch an abortion on guided ultrasound, and that was it. She had a change of heart. For many of the other former clinic workers I've spoken to, it didn't happen until years later, and I think it's because the veil of lies is so very thick. And as I mentioned before, it's the euphemisms that surround the culture of death that make it psychologically acceptable. And it can take some time. And I think that one of the obstacles also for people leaving can have been, at least in the past, what they see when they look out the door. I worked at a clinic in a time when pro-life protesters outside of the clinic were not open and welcoming and peaceful and prayerful the way they are nowadays. The 40 Days for Life movement has changed more hearts and minds than just the pregnant mothers entering the clinic. They absolutely are to be credited with changing hearts and minds of folks working inside as well. If you know you're going to walk out to open arms, acceptance, prayer, support, and not judgment and scorn, it's going to make it easier to walk away.
Wow, this has been a terrific interview, and I just want to thank you, Jules, for taking the time to be with us on
My
Register
pleasure.
Radio, and God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Tim. God bless you, too.
Oh, and my thanks as well, Jules. Your story is very, very powerful. When we return, you probably wouldn't go on a long car trip without a map or a GPS, but what about your life's journey? Do you have a spiritual director? This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Michael Warsaw, Chief Executive of EWTN and publisher of the National Catholic Register. We're in a time in history like no other. In our fight for religious freedom and the need for the new evangelization, it's essential to stay connected via the faithful Catholic content delivered by the Register. We've finally been able to help realize Mother Angelica's dream. She always wanted a newspaper as part of EWTN's media apostolate. Why? Because there's an important catechetical opportunity at the intersection of faith and culture. Since the 1920s, the Register has been advancing the truth of the Magisterium. This valuable resource will help you to better understand the faith and deepen your relationship with our Lord. Join the growing ranks of Register subscribers today and access the one source of leading voices and opinions concerning the issues that matter most to you.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the Register subscription banner or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back to this encore presentation of Register Radio. Along with Dan Burke and Tim Drake, I'm Tom Price. Sister Susan Piper is the Mother Superior of the Apostles of the Interior Life. Her community is very active in the Diocese of Kansas City, Kansas. With the support of Archbishop Naumann, they shepherd an important work to train spiritual mentors to aid others in their work to deepen their relationship with Christ. The Register covered their school and two others in an in-depth article in a recent issue. Sister Susan, welcome to Register Radio.
Thank you.
Sister, it's great to have you with us. As you know, I've been a big fan of what you're doing there in the diocese for several years and in a number of other schools around the nation, because so many people are looking to dig deeper in their spiritual life. They don't know which direction to go, how to overcome common problems. They feel a bit isolated. And there aren't enough priests out there often, or they have excessive workload. So I was so excited when I discovered another school coming up in Kansas City. And I want to talk with you about that today. But before we jump in, could you tell our audience a bit about what exactly is spiritual direction?
Well, Dan, there are all kinds of definitions out there, but I think they boil down to one simple idea, that spiritual direction is an art, of course, an art that helps people grow in their interior lives to the fullness of Christian perfection. If you want, I really like a definition that Father Jordan Allman, who I consider one of the greatest spiritual theologians of the end of the 20th century, when he writes in his textbook, Spiritual Theology, and he puts it in a nutshell. Let's just share that, what he has to say. He says, spiritual direction is the art of leading souls progressively from the beginning of the spiritual life to the height of Christian perfection. I think, without a doubt, he just hit the nail on the head.
That is a beautiful definition. So you're head of the female branch of the Apostles in the Interior Life, and your charism is helping to develop spiritual directors and spiritual direction. Can you tell us a little bit of the part that you play in making that happen?
Well, let me specify just a little bit more with regards to our charism.
Uh-huh.
Father Salvatore, our founder, who just celebrated his 60th anniversary as a priest of the Diocese of Rome, Italy, as a young seminarian, he had the idea. It was obviously just in a very small seed form, let's say, of having people who could help priests in their ministry of forming the souls, of helping the people grow in their interior lives, in their relationship with Jesus. He didn't know what that really meant, but he just had this great desire because he could see the need. He realized that he was very limited as being just one priest, and so he needed other people to be with him to do this. And so he thought at first to find some young men to do this, but then God pulled the rug from underneath of him, and he found me in California, and I was 19 years old, and then, as they say, the rest is history. But the idea was to form people that could help him in helping others grow in their interior life, and so he wanted us, first of all, us apostles of the interior life, to have a strong prayer life. In fact, we have about 4 hours of prayer a day. And then each one of us, both the female branch and the male branch, must study 2 years of philosophy, at least 3 or 5 of theology in one of the pontifical universities in Rome, so that we would have that preparation, that formation to help people in their interior lives. But he saw the need at the same time to evangelize, so he would send us on the streets of Rome, on the campuses in Italy, and stop the young people and talk to them about faith, about the interior life. And so that's the first step of our ministry, is to evangelize. In fact, we have sisters at Texas A&M, sisters at KU, and we've been at UW in Madison and U of I in Champaign evangelizing on the campus. So that's a big piece of our ministry also. I like to underline that because people think that, and I put this in quotation marks, that we only do spiritual direction, and we do. That's a big piece of it, without a doubt. And we also do parish missions and retreats all over the United States and Italy. So I wanted to underline that fact, because sometimes people think that we're just quote-unquote spiritual directors, but we're also evangelizers and apostles sent by God, hopefully, to touch the lives of people. Okay. My part, you were asking my role in all of this. Well, being the first, I always say I'm the old bag. And so for now, I'm the superior general of the female branch of the Apostles Into Your Life. So my ministry, yes, I do a lot of spiritual direction, but I also take care of my sisters to be sure they have everything they need to be able to do their ministry wherever they're at.
Great, great. This is Dan Burke with Register Radio, and I'm with Sister Susan Piper, who's the Superior General of the Apostles in the Interior Life. We're talking about their work in evangelization, spiritual direction. And Sister, this leads us to the work that you're specifically doing in Kansas City, Kansas, and the School for Spiritual Direction, which we covered in the National Catholic Register and the issue that is in homes today. Tell us a little bit about that school and how it's going. You just started not too long ago, and give us an update.
Okay. I'd like to give a little bit of the history.
Sure.
The school is called Catholic Spiritual Mentorship Program. It's all, I want to say this, it's all Archbishop Nauman's fault, our Archbishop of Kansas City, Kansas, because for some years now, seeing the need in his diocese, and I would say an enormous hunger for spiritual direction, spiritual advice, spiritual help, he's been prodding us, pushing us, inviting us to come up with a program to help people to grow in their interior lives. And I actually was looking at some notes I had from him over 5 years ago in a meeting I had with him, and we were talking about other things, and suddenly out of the blue he says, "Sister Susan, I need your sisters to come up with a school, a program, something to help my people to grow in their interior lives, to form spiritual mentors, spiritual directors." And but we kind of put it on the back burner, and then he just kept insisting. So just about 2.5 years ago, more or less, we got together to brainstorm with a very dear priest friend of ours, Father Steve Satiroff of the Diocese of Springfield, Illinois, in Maryville, Illinois. And he's also the chaplain of our movement, Collaborators of Your Joy. And Mike Scherzlicht and Troy Hinkle, who founded School of Faith, which is now in our diocese, all over our diocese, and they've just produced a catechism series which is going all over the United States. And some of our sisters and Rich Henry, a man of our diocese, very wonderful man, to brainstorm about what this could look like. And we also looked into some other courses in the United States, a very good one in Clearwater, Florida. We are always sending people there for their retreats, and also their course to form full-fledged spiritual directors. We don't say we're forming full-fledged spiritual directors. We're forming spiritual mentors.
What's the distinction between the two?
Well, a spiritual director normally is a person, first of all, who has a strong desire for holiness, and also our spiritual mentors have that, obviously. They have a great zeal for souls and a desire to help those souls to come to know God more and to enter into a profound, intimate relationship and deepen their prayer life. And also our spiritual mentors have that. But another distinguishing, a distinguishing factor would be that normally a spiritual director has great knowledge of theology and hopefully philosophy, something our spiritual mentors wouldn't have, because usually spiritual directors, like in our community, like I was saying before, they study 2 years of philosophy, so that's a lot of exams of philosophy. I'd say at least 20 exams of philosophy, and then the 3 years of theology, if not 5 years of theology, getting your licensing.
So the key distinction is really one of the degree of training. So this is Dan Burke with Register Radio, and I'm with Sister Susan Piper, who's the Superior General of the Apostles of the Interior Life, which provides a school for spiritual mentorship in Kansas City, Kansas. This school is open to everyone across the nation, is it not, Sister?
It is. We just had our pilot group, and they're going to have their last session in January that we have. It's a two-year-long program, the Catholic Spiritual Mentorship Program, and there's a distance course with the School of Faith, and then there are 4 week-long live-in sessions at Savior Pastoral Center in Kansas City, Kansas, in the two-year time span. And like I said, our pilot group is going to have their last week session in January. We have people from 12 different dioceses in the United States.
Wow, that's great.
It is unbelievable. I tell you, when we began our advertisement, which was very home-based, very simple, homemade, let's say, over 2 years ago, we thought if we get 20 people, we can cover the costs. And so the applications began to arrive in January, 1.5 years ago, and 20, 25, 30, 35, 45, 50, 55, 60. We got over 70 applicants from all over the United States. And, of course, at the end, we accepted only 69. And we have people from all sorts of backgrounds, Dan. We have three permanent deacons, but we have three married couples. We have a wonderful truck driver who trucks all over the United States. We have a young married woman who brought her Down syndrome child, Matthew Joseph.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So we have married people. We have people from 25 years of age almost into their 80s.
Sister, we have about 30 seconds, so it'd be great to close our time. I wish we had more with a can you direct folks to where they can find out more about the program? Of course,
Definitely. It's
in the current edition of the Register. They can look at ncregister.com to read about the school. But what's the website address?
It's www.schoolofaith.com. And it's school, not schools, schoolofaith.com.
And then they can scroll down to the bottom of the page and they'll see a little button there that says, it says AVI, School of Spiritual Mentorship. Is that right, if my memory serves me?
Catholic Spiritual Mentorship Program, yes.
Very good.
They'll find that button there, yes.
Sister Susan, thank you so much for joining us on Register Radio today.
Thank you, and God bless you, Dan, for all you do.
God bless you.
And my thanks as well, sister. Don't forget you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for the microphone to listen or download the show. Thanks for joining us for this special encore presentation of Register Radio. For all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.